It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are both here in the studio on this absolutely glorious day. It's before Adam takes off with the little superstars and heads out to a soccer game, which I told him that if there's a day to play soccer, this is the one.
It is beautiful out there today.
Yep. You couldn't change a thing and make it better. But I digress a little, not too far. Anyway, to all the regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being there. You're the reason we keep on doing this into our eighth year now and counting. No plans to do anything else for a long time. If you're new to the show, either accidentally or somebody told you about it, then try to stick around for the whole hour. I promise very little in life, but I promise something every Saturday, and that's that if you listen to the whole hour, you'll learn something. I didn't say it'd be worth your time or not. I didn't say it'd be worth your money or not, but most likely it'd be worth both. That's the way we'd like to
probably worth
it.
Your money, because it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, and in fact, with this rampant inflation, I've been considering doubling the price of the show.
That seems a little extreme.
Yeah, well, I haven't done it yet. I haven't pulled the trigger, so we'll see. Anyway, got lots to cover today. I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I often try to sum up the market week in a single word or a very short phrase. And back then, I came up with Dramamine, and I'm just repeating that today, is you need it after watching the motion sickness. It's like being out on the ocean with huge waves, just watching the market gyrate this week. But much to Howard's surprise, I gather, and much to my surprise, too, and Adam, except we were watching it happen, it did wind up, except for a very minor down on the Dow, and that will lead us to a trivia question after the market wrap and after the break. So this week in Hill Country, what happened?
Yeah, so if you just looked at the numbers, you just pulled them up and said, okay, here's where we started, here's where we ended the week, you would think that not much happened, but you would be really wrong. It was a dramatic move on all the indexes this week, but the Dow ended down just a tenth of a percent, which is crazy.
And please remember, this was a 4-day week.
Yeah, short week. S&P was up by 0.8, and the NASDAQ was up by 1.1%. So pretty a good week, but it doesn't seem like there was a lot of action. But it was a wild ride just to get back to even. During the first couple of days of trading on the short week, stocks were down significantly as Russia prepared to invade Ukraine. And then I guess it was Wednesday night, they moved in and the S&P hit correction territory. The NASDAQ was flirting with bear market territory. And then the Thursday night, the futures plummeted. And towards the open that day, they had come back up, but they were still negative. And then something funny happened as stocks traded on Thursday. Everything just started to slowly trend upward, and it turned into a really good day. Since the Thursday open, the S&P has rallied 6.5%, the NASDAQ 8.5%, Bitcoin staged a 10.4% rally, and oil, which had climbed all week, fell 6.75% as stocks rallied.
That caught everybody by surprise.
Yeah, definitely. Really, really strange trading action, but also not surprising because the market tends to do not the opposite of what you think will happen, but what it doesn't do is what everyone thinks will happen. So when everyone thinks that this war in Ukraine is going to make the market plunge further, you just know that that won't be the result.
Remember the Trump years? Russia, Russia, Russia?
Yeah.
Well, we're back.
Yeah. It's so weird. There's so many ties to the Ukraine, Russia, all everything that's happening right now has been talked about in the last 4 to 8 years, but in the completely wrong way. And also, it just seems so strange right now that we're witnessing a country be aggressive in start a war with another country. It's so foreign to us in this day and age. We haven't seen this in so long.
He would have preferred an immediate surrender, you know. They could have made this easy.
Right.
Just hand them the car keys and leave.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is strange times we live in. For the month of February and year to date in 2022, there aren't a lot of positive sectors, but the one that just across the world, but the one that stands out the most right now, if you look at a chart of all the worldwide markets, the Russia market really stands out. They're down almost 35% in February. 17% of that drop came in the last 2 days. So not surprising, but their market is also down 41% in 2022. So that kind of tells you the worldwide response to Russia's aggression.
It's
not positive. Yeah. What I would like to know is actually where the buyers are coming from to keep that number from dropping further.
who are buying? Somebody forgot to deprogram their computer.
Seriously, that's bizarre. Russia, to me, does not look very investable right now, nor will it probably for the next decade because of this. I just don't see a way that this ends well for Russia. It's going to be bad. The German market also took a bit of a hit, and a lot of that, in my estimation, comes from their dependence on Russian energy. Mm-hmm. They made the kind of mind-boggling decision to shut off all their nuclear power and rely on basically Russian natural gas for to power the country. It's seeming like a really bad move right now.
it did at the time, too.
Yeah, but even worse today. And, I really can't explain that. If you look at where they are today, they're down 8% compared to other countries across Europe are mostly flat to slightly down, but Germany stood out as being the worst performer. On the other end of the scale, the Brazil market is booming, up over 17% in 2022. And China didn't really see the bounce. I had talked about this prior to the Olympics. Most countries see a bounce from the Olympics. They really missed out on that. And they did manage a small 0.5% gain in February, but they're down over 6% in 2022. So just not a lot of big numbers. The only two that stood out were Brazil on one side, Russia on the other. Everything else kind of moving in lockstep with the U.S. market, which is down between 2 and 10% on the year. Inside the S&P 500, the sectors that have been hit the hardest this year are the ones that rallied the most in the last couple of trading days. Technology saw an increase of almost 5% in the last 2 days, but it's down over 11% in 2022. Consumer discretionary and communication services both saw rallies over 4% in the last 2 days, but they're down 14% and 12% this year. Energy, which is up 24% this year, saw a rally of just under 2% in the last couple of days. So you can kind of see the trend there where everything that has done well this year was in the last few days, and everything that did poorly this year was up big.
Yeah, a lot of bargain hunters out there today.
That is true. Commodities have had a really good run in 2022, with the index climbing almost 13%, much of that being due to a 26% increase in natural gas and a 21% increase in oil. But gold and silver and agricultural commodities have also contributed. So it's kind of a broad-based rally in commodities.
Just a reflection of the inflationary environment we're in right now. Nothing more, nothing less, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple more things to wrap up on the other side, but we're up on a break.
Yeah, and that whole inflation question has not gotten any better. Is that a nice way to put it?
No, I keep looking for signs that it's going to ease, because I know that there are areas that it will ease in, but we're not seeing it yet.
Yeah, it's got to start with energy, in my opinion, and that will start when energy policy starts to look better, both foreign and domestic, and that's going to be a little while. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
Lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the trivia question in 1 minute. I call this the long and winding road trivia question.
Okay.
The Dow spent 4 long days in a sort of wild ride, I guess you'd say, this week, to wind up down 20 points. So my question is, how far did it have to travel to get there? What that means is, how many points were in the trading range of each of the 4 days added together? And needless to say, it was more than 20.
It's a big one. Yeah.
You've got a floor on it now. So you can give us a call and take a shot at that any old time. Otherwise, we'll carry on talking about what we want to talk about, but we would love to hear from you, whether it's a trivia question or whether it might be a financial question of some sort. Anything goes here. That's why it's live. All right. Do you want to wrap up a couple points?
Well, first, I just want to say congratulations to Nick Howland, who prevailed in the election this week. He is the new at-large city councilman for Duval County, Jacksonville. And just, I think we got a good one. He's a good guy. I think he'll do good things for the city.
And well, I'd like to think this show played a very small part in it, too, because in a midterm election, there's really no enthusiasm out there. The turnout's always pretty bad, but turnout was up this time.
Oh, it was. I think they were expecting 15% of voters.
It was over 20.
Yeah, so it was actually a pretty big turnout for this type of election. Yeah, this wasn't even
any of you who heard anything about it, or whether you were going to vote anyway and voted for Nick. Remember, every one of those votes counted, and we did it.
Yeah, definitely. His opponent actually had the lead going into voting day, but that's typical.
Republicans vote on the voting day.
Exactly. Yep. Republicans and older people. It's I don't know if it's tradition or what it is, but
it just feels good too.
How it works. So he was optimistic because the lead she had was smaller than what their projection was for how much he would gain on voting day, and it was right. So congratulations.
I'll tell you, after reading up on both of those candidates, he aligns himself very well with the people we know, including the two of us in this room, and I agree with you. I think he's going to make a great representative of all of the area.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's just everything is so political these days, but they really tried to paint him as a far-right Trump, and he's not. I know him personally. That is not him at all. He is... He definitely is on the conservative side, but he is not a far right, crazy QAnon person. So
yeah, I got a little something to say about that too. That doesn't involve that kind of thing, but if we get to it today, there's an article that I think is just so illustrative of how people think about people like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the comments, it's crazy the comments would read on Facebook about him and about people who know nothing about it, but right. Yeah. Anyways, we'll just leave it at that. People are nuts.
Yep. So,
anyways, let's get back to the market. In the bond market, rates slipped a bit this week, and it gave the struggling sector some breathing room. But there isn't a fixed income sector that is positive on the year. And I would be surprised if that's not the same story I'm telling you in December and January. I just don't see it being a very good year for fixed income. It would be it's hard to paint a scenario
there's no impetus for fixed income to do well.
No. Definitely
and speaking
not.
Of which, what's the Fed going to do in March?
A quarter point. I've maintained that throughout. Mm-hmm. I thought the 50 point hike was overblown. I don't believe it. I think it's too much soon.
If it had spent some time not being too overblown, this week fixed it.
Yes, exactly. Could the market? Do we need it? Yes.
Yeah.
Are they going to do it like that? No. Yep. I think they spread them out a bit. It's too much of a shock to the system.
Yep.
Also, if you're looking for positive signs in the market for weeks to come, I have a couple. There are some. You could paint it either way from here. Honestly,
absolutely.
It's easy to paint a downside picture. It's a little bit tougher to paint an upside picture. But there's two things that I wanted to mention. The performance of semiconductors might be one of them.
That's the biggie.
Many people consider this the transportation sector of the 21st century. And if you know anything about the last century, people always said wherever transportation, that sector goes, so goes the market.
Leading indicator.
Yep. Semiconductors are somewhat like that today because they go into everything. And right now they are trending higher relative to the overall market. Typically when that happens, the market follows them. So that's a good sign. Another positive sign is that bearish sentiment ticked up again to 53.7%. That's the highest level since 2013. And if you follow the show, you know that we like it when bearish sentiment ticks up like that. Typically a good sign for the 6 months to a year out projections for the market. So two little tidbits, take them for what they're worth, but good news, potentially.
All right, I want to hit some highlights of something that happened this week, and I'll just pick through a little bit and this was something that we sent out, and it said, basically, some of you may remember some of this, politics and economics, they both drive the market. One of them tends to be rational, the other one tends to be irrational, that being politics. And over time, the economics will eventually take over, and that's why the market's grown over a long period of time. So when you look at a bad period like this, it's always important, as Adam and I do every time this happens, we look at each other and say, why? And if we can't answer that question, we don't do anything. If there were a reason, this goes back now, I'm thinking about 2007, why did that happen? Well, because things were a bloody mess. That's why it happened. The money market funds were looking to break the buck, and the mortgages were overblown. Defaults were going absolutely crazy. They were giving houses to people who didn't make any money, and the whole thing was just out of control. And when that happens, then you've got the definition of a bubble. Nothing like that is going on now. The political problems that we have here these days are temporary, and they're overweighted in people's minds. Ukraine just is not that important, people.
It's not Ukraine. It's the potential for what comes
next.
That's
right.
That's the problem.
One more step, and you're in NATO territory.
Yeah.
Then you got trouble.
Or if China looks at that and or says, Taiwan looks good. That's
now, that one means a lot more
yes,
to us than
absolutely.
Ukraine. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways this could go bad. But this particular incident that was causing the roughness in the early part of the week was overblown, I guess. It's
fear. The market always sells off hard on fear and the unknown, and that's what this was.
Mm-hmm. Well, we sent this to clients and friends on the 24th of February, and everything I just told you was from a previous letter that we sent out to them dated December 20th, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does history repeat itself?
Always.
Because look what happened after December 20th, 2018. It was a real good time. So my point is there's nothing new under the sun. You got to take each of these incidents exactly for what it's worth. And this one, as long as it stays contained, was not worth the pain and suffering. Well, it wasn't, 4 hours later after everybody got this that the market reversed and went positive?
It's true.
And I never admit, at least I try not to, during the process of having a bad market day or week or whatever, I try very hard not to admit that we get scared too.
Well, it's been 2 months. I mean, it's never fun.
But we know what the right thing to do is, and we have counseled people to do the right thing. And right now, we're looking pretty good. Next week, we'll let you know how good.
we'll see.
And meanwhile, speaking of irrational things like Justin Trudeau, having gotten the limelight taken away from him, apparently, he just quietly announced that the Emergency Act was no longer needed. Here's his cohort. Her name is Candace Bergen. No, not that one.
Okay.
She's the leader of the opposition party in Canada. And here's a little clip from what she said. Today's announcement is proof that the Prime Minister was wrong when he invoked the Emergencies Act. The Conservative Party knew it was wrong. Experts knew he was wrong. Canadians knew he was wrong. The Prime Minister was wrong when he invoked it. He was wrong when he voted to continue it at 8 o'clock p.m. on Monday. And he was wrong when he made it a confidence vote. Now, that's sticking it to him pretty well, I think. I like the scale.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
That unbelievable. And what was more unbelievable was a poll I saw that polled Democrats in the U.S. and that the percentage that supported his moves in doing that was through the roof. Really unbelievable.
Now, if you want to talk about an Emergency Powers Act that actually does something to or for your wallet, the Ukrainians, the Zelensky, the Emergency Power Act they're using is a good use of something like that. But let's not get overblown in politics as to what's really going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
My point is very simple. Let's follow the economics and do exactly what we've been doing lately. And I see no reason on earth that we shouldn't expect things to get dramatically better for the rest of this year barring the big one. You know, the big one could be, as I always used to say, the mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv, or in this case, the bomber jets over Taiwan. That one, I am totally wide open to making a tactical change for. I'm not counting on it happening. I'd like to think it'd be peaceful. Meanwhile, your wallet's got a lot better this week, and I think your mental attitudes, just knowing ours, have improved largely. And with that said, we're going to go into the break, and we'll come back and start getting into some much more fun things. All right, don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255, which is how you could take a shot at this trivia question. I call it the Long and Winding Road Trivia. On the way in this four-day week to the Dow closing down only 20 points, how far did it travel? Meaning, what was the total variation each day summed up across 4 days? Big number. Mm-hmm. Trust me, big number. All right, last week I made a promise on air, and I'd like to do my best to keep them. And somebody had asked about, if you remember, the trivia question in particular, it was about how numbers can be so misleading, and if you're not careful, somebody can lead you into thinking something that isn't necessarily true. And this last week it was about net worth, average net worth of Americans. But the overall average was $748,800. If you compute it using an average, which of course includes the billionaires and so on, and it counts every one of their dollars, so it inflates the total package. But if you get onto the median, which is a simple measure of how many are above that number and how many are below that number, an equal point, so if you listed them by size, you just find the exact midpoint, and that's your median. That's only $121,700. So people who could look at their own net worth, which is simply all your assets minus all your liabilities, they might come up with a number. My example, and I put it on the blog, was $200,000. Now, if you're going to compare that to 748.8, you're going to be thinking, man, I'm just not doing well. I got to do something. But if you compare it to the median of $121,700, you're looking really good. So then an alert caller said, well, that should be done by age group, shouldn't it? Yes, and I'm going to give you sort of a rundown of what happens over ages, and then I think I'll throw this chart into the blog for next week, and you can look it up if you're interested where you stand compared to your fellow Americans. But it starts out in the 18-year-old group. The average net worth is $28,000, but the median is only $8,000. And it bumps up a little and grows 25, 30, 35, keeps growing. You get up at about 50 years old, then the average is almost 900,000, but the median is 171,000.
Hmm.
Now get up to 60, actually you get up to 55 to 59 group, and it goes over a million. It's 1,165,000 average, but still under 200,000 median.
Wow.
So if you're sitting there thinking about retiring and you're sitting on 175, 200, 225, know that you're not, maybe you're not wealthy, but you're not falling way behind the wagon either. Now, it stays up over a million on average through the 60s and even 70 to 74, at which time it starts to come back down. The average goes down to 945 for people under 70 and 973 for people over 80. The median just keeps stumbling along, growing, growing, growing. So at 60, it's 228, and it jumps up again at 65 to 271 before it starts to pare back. Now, what's the point of all of this? The point is you might be a lot better off than you think, but basically they're just numbers. Your situation could be radically different than somebody else's. You could live in a very high-rent district, so to speak, like California, New York, Miami, which we're getting to, and you might feel like you're not living all that well, whereas if you lived in Mississippi or something like that, you might be living like a king. But the people who are interested in checking this out, if you compute your own and you want to have a quick reference as to what's what, I'll try to stick it into the blog and make it easy so you can just look at your own age and see how do I stack up to America.
Yeah, the way I would look at that is I would say that the you should at least try and be at the average, mm-hmm. and the median should be your target. So if you're somewhere in between, that's pretty good.
Yep.
But if you're just at the average, you're probably honestly a little underprepared based on those
just
numbers.
At the median.
The
lower number.
Yeah, at the median. And then try and shoot for getting to the average, because the average looks a lot more like a comfortable number.
It does.
For a comfortable retirement than the median does.
Yeah, if you're young today, in your 20s, 30s, we deal with these people a lot. They're getting stretched every which way with homes and cars and kids and on and on and on. It's very hard to get a real substantial hold on the rest of your financial ever. But you got to keep doing it, because that's what creates your situation later on. It just takes lots of time.
Mm-hmm.
Compounding is, someone asked Albert Einstein what was man's greatest invention. He said, compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I added my own little touch to that, and it says, but it sure takes a long time.
It does.
But it's good to know that very thing when you're getting going. And don't feel badly by comparing yourself to something that is not even a valid comparison.
One of the reasons it's so hard is rents. Rents are soaring right now. And in fact, if you look at Miami, Boston, and New York City, and Jacksonville, actually, rents soared by over 20% last year. Makes it really tough to afford a place. In the 50 largest U.S. metro areas, median rent rose an astounding 19.3%. Of course, this is from an article in the UK Daily Mail. Miami was the biggest jump. Median rent surged to $2,850 per month. That's an increase of 49.8% over last year.
That's just mind-boggling.
Unbelievable. And a lot of that just has to do with the sheer amount of people moving to Florida right now. It's really insane.
How many of you got a 50% increase in your pay over the last year? Not many, I suspect.
Yeah. So it's not all that. Part of it is the cost of building new places because mm-hmm. of inflation and materials prices. There's a lot of reasons that this is happening. But what's interesting is if you look at some of these cities where maybe people are leaving right now, like let's take Los Angeles. It saw an increase of 14%. So still an increase, but mm-hmm. way lower than a city like Miami. And even a city like Jacksonville, which was up over 25%. So, and then I found a News for Jax article that broke it down. If you're at the beach, 32250, where was that? Right here. At the beach, it was even a little bit worse than the rest of Jacksonville. The increase was closer to 34% price hike, and a median rent now of $2,550 a month in 32250. But there are other areas that were even worse. By the St. John's Town Center, 32224, rent increased nearly 38%, but the median is still a lot lower than the beach, $1,975 per month. But those are still pretty astronomical numbers.
Those are biggies.
Yeah, so if you're thinking that you have a little bit less money than you did, even with some of the pay increases we've seen, that is probably where it's going.
Yeah, overall real estate prices went up 18.8% over the last 12 months. That is not a particularly fun thing to think about either if you're looking to be a buyer. And then, of course, the mortgage rate is nudged up, so it's over 4% again on average, which means it's going to be a lot harder to buy than it was. But really important. Good morning, caller. I don't have a name.
Good morning. It's Cynthia.
Well, hi, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Gorgeous. Well, wonderful.
Today, isn't it?
Yes. What's on your mind today? You want to take a shot?
I had a question about the Fed and interest rates. The Fed is supposedly going to meet in a few weeks. Do you think they're going to raise rates 25 basis points or 50?
Yeah, Adam weighed on that a little bit ago. He's at 0.25, and I am too. And I think the goings on in the market and so on have made the half a point sort of out of reach.
So
it would be politically disastrous.
It would be. But interesting that you asked that, because last week when we looked at it, the market was sort of pricing in a 50-point rate hike next month, and now the odds for that have dropped all the way from in the 70 or 80% range down to the 20% range. So the market's saying they think a quarter point next month.
But will it happen? I believe it will.
I think so, too.
I don't think it's going to have too much impact on too many things because rates have been bid up in the marketplace already.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it isn't going to take place, and I still believe that we need it. I don't know if you're in agreement with all that or not.
What do you think is the terminal rate?
How much what?
What is the terminal rate, do you think?
Oh, where does the hiking end? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
2.5, 3 on the way.
I think we're talking at least a couple years out. If the economy remains strong, I think the cycle could last a while.
All right, Cynthia, we're on the downslope here. We got a couple seconds. Can I put you on hold, or is that good?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, too. You too. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have our trivia question wide open. I don't remember if I gave out the credits, but it's sponsored as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. How far did the Dow travel to lose only 20 points this week? And that means what was the total variation per day times collectively over 4 days? All right, how many of you out there have a Venmo or Robinhood account, or there might be a couple others, but that type of thing? It uses a software thing called Plaid. I know absolutely nothing about it, but Visa's been trying to acquire Plaid, and it's not going really well for whatever reasons. Anyway, anybody who has an account with some of those places should look this up, because there's a class action lawsuit that you can join and maybe get some money back, because Plaid was not playing nicely with others, apparently. But if everybody does this, now you better sit down when you hear this thing, because this is really stunning. A recent estimate pegged the number of people eligible for a claim at approximately 98 million.
That's a big number.
It is a big number. So if everybody files for compensation, each of them would get about, you ready? Wait for it. 60 cents.
Ooh.
Now, if you all want to jump in there and go through all kinds of trouble, just look it up and fill out the paperwork. And just hope you don't have to mail a letter or anything, because it's gone with the cost of the stamp. It's just, you can't make this stuff up. And good news for me, you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean,
right there in black and white.
I'm actually eligible, so my money problems are over.
All right, we should spend a little bit of time on every show for the next few weeks talking about taxes.
Okay.
I think. So one of the things that I find is very much misunderstood is IRA contributions. Now, IRA contributions can be made by, there's no longer an age limit. Used to be limited at 70 and a half, but no longer. So it's anyone who has earned income may contribute up to either the legal limit or up to the amount of earned income. And they're allowed to do that every year. It's currently $6,000 plus another $1,000 if you're 50 or over. So there is universal surprise, it seems, that when we tell people, well, you don't have to both be working. You can make a spousal contribution. And you do not have to open a spousal IRA to do it unless your spouse doesn't have an IRA. Then you have to open one. But it doesn't have to be called a spousal. There's no technical name that way. It's the contribution that is spousal. So if you made $14,000 and you're each 50 or over, then you can each do $7,000. And it doesn't have to be made by one or the other to be legal. But there's a catch that a lot of people don't know about. You have to be married as of December 31st of the year of the contribution. Now, since contributions can be made up to your tax filing day the next year for the year prior, that means at the end of last year, you had to be married if you want to make a 2021 contribution. For 2022, you will have to be married on December 31st of this year. So I asked myself a question this morning in the wee hours when I was starting to think about this stuff. What if one of them dies? What if the working spouse dies? Can you figure out off the top of your head what that rule would be?
I would think that in the year of the death, you would still be able to do the contributions, but not obviously not further than that.
And you are absolutely correct. And the reason for that is when one spouse dies and they've been filing jointly, or even if they haven't been, but they're going to, if you filed jointly at the end of last year, for file it now for then, you're considered married. So even if the working spouse is no longer with us, you can still do it. Now, there's another little hook on the end of that one, too. How about the dead spouse?
I would think because they worked during that year. Is the dead spouse the working spouse?
Yes.
Yeah, I would think they would still be able to
contribute. And you'd be wrong.
Oh, okay.
And you don't want to hear what the IRS's logic on that is?
Sure.
I got a kick out of this one. They no longer need to save for retirement. I'm not making this up either.
I mean, they're not wrong about that.
That's what I said.
Still a bit harsh considering the money was earned in that year, and they could have done it had they known they were going to die. Yeah.
If the timing had been better, which is another way to say, why don't you make your IRA contributions earlier?
Yeah. So there's different schools of thought on that. A lot of people like to dollar cost average across the year,
True.
And that's a good way to do it for sure. A lot of people use their tax return to put some of that money either into for the next year.
Yeah, and IRS they're very happy to do that for you.
Yep.
Right out of your return.
That's right. And some people need that whole year to save up enough to make an IRA, or some people need to do more tax planning before they can figure out how much they want to put in the IRA. So there are a lot of reasons to delay it also.
Big reason to try not to.
Yeah, I don't know that.
15 months extra in.
Well, that's true.
Yes. If you get an extra year in 3 or 4 months just by making it early in the year that it's designated for. So.
Yeah.
And another one. Random little things that are coming up. I just like between now and April 15th that hit a couple of topics a week. How about making, I've got to figure out how to put this one. I'm going to have to come back to it. I had a really great way to put it, but no. So going on to what we were just talking about. 4 investment myths advisors believe in. Now, this is interesting, and those of you who've known us for a long time might be scratching your head and say, huh? Because the first one is the supposedly believed concept that inflation damages stock portfolios.
Only if the economy can't support that inflation. So if prices are going up and people can't afford to spend it, then it could damage stock prices.
Right, number 2, dollar cost averaging is better than lump sum investing. This one's really controversial, I think.
Well, in a rising market, that would be true, but the market doesn't always rise. So dollar cost averaging over a long time, I believe, has been proven to be better.
I don't know which advisors they're talking about, but to me, it's very client-centric. What you do, it's part cash flow. You obviously can't make all your deposits early in the year unless you got the cash to do it.
Right.
So adding money as you go is a good thing. It also depends if you're in a TSP or 401k, where you can actually lose matching funds by contributing too quickly.
Yep.
That's a biggie. That's cut way too many people. So there is not a consensus that way, and including when you're dealing with somebody who has accumulated quite a bit of money and is either new clients or going into the market where they hadn't before with some new money, they're not always comfortable doing single day investing.
Right. Although in that case where you have a lump sum over a long period of time, statistically there isn't a lot of difference between putting it all on day one and stretching it out over a certain amount of time either.
Yeah,
but comfort level is a big deal for investors.
It is. So. And we don't have a rule of thumb. Our rule of thumb is to ask questions and educate clients and do what fits them best. All right, number 3, options just add risk to a portfolio. Is that a common investor thought?
Some people think that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm on the fence on this one, too.
So options add a lot of risk if you don't do them right. I mean, you can make a mistake very easily that can cost you a lot of money.
That is true. And it's so true that most people, most advisors like us, do not deal in them.
No.
We do not want any part of it. It's too complicated. People who are successful with options have time on their hands to track those options. Yeah. And they have to be, on an individual basis, watched constantly if you're going to exercise or not. In fact, the only option trading that is even allowable inside an IRA is a covered call, which is the least risky option out there. So number four, global diversification reduces risk and increases returns.
Not in the last 10 years.
No, that's true. But in general,
yeah,
we always say that if you get to a certain amount of money and you're then looking to diversify further, that having a small part in here, this was based on 25% or more international.
That's too much. I don't like
that. That, people, is just nuts. All right, the Dow came out of the chute and dropped and then rose and dropped and rose and was going to go on and on and on until I was dizzy at the end. It traveled 3,323 points to wind up down 20.
Over 800 points a day move.
Now, that kind of action, I don't know if it's sustainable or not, but it sure gives you a lot of gray hair. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.